Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast from the Sober Club. I hope you're well. And this week, we're going to dive into a topic that I talk about an awful lot. It'd be nice, quite nice to get somebody else to chip in. We're talking about good nutrition and all that it means. And just before we get into this interview, just a reminder, because you know, obviously, if there's someone listening to this podcast who's kind of new to it all and maybe just stopped drinking, I mean, I have said it a million times, but it's so worth remembering that if you're just in the early stages of choosing not to drink, everything is going to be recalibrating. And this is so not the time to also stop eating. People do. And I've had clients who've said to me, oh, I thought I'd take the opportunity to lose a few pounds. So I'm only having one meal a day. Absolutely not. This is really so the time to build up your nutritional profile. You need really, really nutrient dense food. Nothing fatty. You can't do the fasting thing. You've really got to be able to support that nervous system, support the brain chemistry with really good food. So this is the time for proper recovery food. It really, really is. And you know, lots of people get very, everything kind of changes. Their taste buds change. In the early weeks, people often start to crave sugar. It's really common. But there are other ways of doing that. You know, there are some sugar swaps, which, you know, we'll talk about later in the interview. But the most important thing is to get through those first few weeks and do all the other pieces, you know, get your mindset in place. But definitely focus on eating good food. But this interview today, this chat that I'm going to have today with Rob Hobson is literally for everyone. We're talking very generically about how we can eat really well. I was really impressed with Rob's book. It's called Unprocess Your Life. And I've interviewed Rob before a while ago. We did an interview for the Sober Club on sleep, which was really fascinating, and the foods that can support sleep. But I was very interested in this book because what Rob's managed to do is come up with some really great recipes and ideas that are really straightforward. But they're swaps, if you like, for things that people enjoy, their guilty pleasures, but without, you know, he's managed to do them without the guilt. I mean, really, what's not to like? And I think, you know, for many people, it's only when they stop drinking that they do start to open up and look at other things. Because let's face it, when you're drunk, all you want is a kebab or whatever. You know, we don't exactly make the best choices, do we? When we've had too much to drink. And when you're sober, you're able to kind of look at the whole picture with fresh eyes, and you're able to kind of say, wow, well, okay, so I'm putting this in my body, what's in it? and the key is there, right? Because if the list of ingredients is so long that it can barely fit on the can or the packet, then you know that you'd be better off having no label foods, you know, the ones without, that don't even come in a can or a packet. But of course, we're human, and it's not going to happen for most of us all of the time. That's why, you know, the other website that I run, as you know, is called imperfectlynatural.com. And that's exactly my take on it. None of us can get everything 100% right. But when it comes to our nutrition, when it comes to the food that we put in, we've just got to give it our best shot. We really have. So really pleased to be able to bring this interview to you. I think you'll get a lot from it. The book is fantastic. I'll put the link in the show notes. And you might want to listen to this interview with a pen and paper. Well, I'm absolutely delighted to be able to chat to Rob Hobson again. We chatted, goodness, ages ago, wasn't it, Rob, about sleep?
A while ago. Yeah. Wear glasses now. That's how long it's been. So I can't. No. Really.
So we spoke about sleep and a few other bits and bobs around nutrition, but recently I've just been it's just been amazing to see all the press and publicity around your latest book, Unprocess Your Life, and it just is such a fantastic book, and I think you've done such an amazing job in kind of you know, helping people who might not have even thought that way before, if you like, adopt a, you know, really sort of wholesome approach to unprocessed foods. So well done you. You know, it's a, it's, it really is a great read. So tell us a bit about the origins of it then. I mean, share a little bit of your story and the work you do, and how did this particular book come about?
Yes, so I'm a nutritionist. I'm a registered nutritionist and registered sports nutritionist. So I work with private clients, and through my consultancy, I also work with brands and the wellness industry, and anything really to do with nutrition, that side of things, working at retreats, all sorts of stuff I get involved. And then I basically got interested in this book because I started reading around the topic, and I just thought it was really. And then I looked at what I was eating, and even though I was eating healthily, I still saw all these foods were ultra processed. And we can talk about this in a bit. I mean, there is a bit of contention between energy ultra processed foods and then some that, you know, your pizzas, your takeaway foods and all that kind of stuff. But essentially what I thought was, I'm eating healthily, but this stuff is ultra processed. So I decided to make the cookbook, which was really just meant to be a collection of homemade versions of ultra processed foods that you normally buy. And then sort of evolved into something else, which was, I kind of realized that people have a weak spot during the day when they're more likely to eat an ultra processed food. So I decided to lay it out as in feeding the kids or breakfast time or speedy meals if you've come in late from work and that's when you reach for something ultra processed. And then the rest of it was really just my experience of trying to actually do this, live unprocessed. So just tips and tricks as the best way to approach it. Be very realistic. You know, nobody's telling you to give these foods up for good. It's just about cutting back, making healthier food choices. And almost the UPF thing is really just like a nice trigger for people, you know, to make a change, as it were.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we go any further then, can we, let's just establish, you know, what ultra processed foods are, you know, just in case anyone's thinking, oh my goodness, well, what does that mean? Is it only a chicken takeaway or what is, you know, what, you know, can you loosely tell us the food groups, or, well, I mean, in a sense, they're not, a lot of it is not even food, is it? But maybe that's going another layer.
So basically, we have this classification system called the NOVA system, which was created by researchers, and that was to help classify, originally actually look at patterns in the world. But then it's been used since to sort of think about where certain foods fit in to whether they're processed or ultra processed. So you obviously have your unprocessed, minimally processed foods. So these are things like you'd expect, lean meats, sort of foods in their natural state, whole grains, pulses, lentils. Minimally processed could be a pasta. So you've added a bit of water to flour, break another dish. Then we've got processed. So processed is basically foods that have maybe had something added to them, like a culinary ingredient. So that could be some chickpea in salted water. It could be salted nuts. Do you see what I mean? It's where you've got the unprocessed food with a bit of salt, sugar, honey, or whatever added to it. But it's had minimal processing. Ultra-processed foods are foods that, if you look at the ingredient list, they're very long. They're normally got a very long shelf life. They're made to be very convenient. They've got ingredients that you might not recognize in your normal kitchen. So emulsifiers, preservatives, artificial colorings, flavorings, you wouldn't be able to recreate these foods. So they're your ultra processed foods. And we're talking about, like you said, a lot of takeaway food. It could be jarred sauces, pizzas, ready meals, those kind of manufactured products. I think where it does get a bit confusing for people is, you know, when you look at the research, there isn't a lot of information on exactly what to look out for on the products causing the most damage. So people are like, what do I give up? What preservative do I look for? That doesn't really exist, that type of research. But we know overall that if you eat a lot of these foods, they're not great for your health. So you know, the consensus is to try and cut back on them as much
Yeah.
as possible.
I mean, what is the, again, we won't go too much on this because I think we all realise that we want to aim to eat as unprocessed as possible. But just to kind of drive it home a little bit more, what are the impacts of these foods? I mean, we know that many of them are very high in sugar. So that ain't going to be a good start, or sweetener, which you might argue is even worse. But then there's all these, as you say, unrecognizable things, you know, the emulsifiers, the kind of the weird stuff. So, you know, at its worst, why are these impacting our health?
So if we look at the research, what they found was, well, to start with, we know, like you said, foods high in saturated fat, salt and sugar can increase our risk of diseases like cardiovascular disease. We know that, and that's what's in a lot of ultra-processed foods. But when the researchers looked at food intake and then they looked at the risks for these diseases, they actually took out the element of saturated fat, salt and sugar and found that there was still a risk happening. And some of them were quite big risks. You know, the higher intakes of UPS were sort of 24% more likely to get cardiovascular disease events than people that didn't have these high intakes, as just one example. Mm. And there's lots of research around certain types of cancer, dementia, depression, you know, cardiovascular disease, gut inflammation. So yes, there's a lot of research to sort of indicate. I mean, the research is observational, so you can't definitively say that does this. We don't have that research yet. But as a pattern intake, it's very clear that people that have the highest intake of foods have an increased risk of disease. So therefore, it's a good idea to sort of eat less of them, if you see what.
Absolutely. And I know also, you know, something that's very relevant to listeners to this is that, you know, you also touch in the book on the connection between food and brain chemistry, effectively. So what does it do to us emotionally? It's not just the physical side of things, is it? You know, it can, I mean, food affects our mood, obviously. And there'll be a lot of people listening who have stopped drinking. And so they you know, they're not getting their kind of dopamine rush in quite the same way. So the food that we eat becomes really important when we're trying to get that brain chemistry balance, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you've got instances, I mean, looking at the other elements, which are actually really interesting about UPS as well, is the fact that you change the food matrix. So these foods are much softer, they're much more quickly digested. So you can eat them very fast and you can overconsume them. They're also marketed in a way to us that makes us want to eat them. You know, the way they're designed, the flavors, the even the shape of them and the mouthfeel, they're moreish. We want to eat more of them. But that food matrix thing could impact on your blood sugar levels. It could send your blood sugar levels quite imbalanced if you're getting these very processed carbohydrate foods. So that could impact on your mood. You know, we've seen there's some research, animal studies, that are looking at the impact that emulsifiers, for example, have on the diversity of bacteria in your gut. Mm. And that we know that if you have a poor gut bacteria diversity, microbiota, then that can impact on your, it could impact on your mental health. Most of the cells in your body is made in your gut. You're also looking at, you know, issues with gut inflammation, maybe even issues around cardiovascular disease because of that imbalance. And of course, obesity is a big one. That connection between certain hunger and satiety hormones that happen in your brain could get disrupted. So there are lots of things to think about. But I think what's really important is that people don't get really paranoid about this and start trying to cut everything out, get overly concerned about looking at food labels, worrying about if they can't afford to eat completely unprocessed, are they doing something wrong, instead of looking for usable, workable solutions
In
the context of what the information is that's being given to us, which is kind of what I tried to do with the book, really, is just try and put it into context and offer workable solutions so you can do the best you can without feeling like you're doing something wrong or you're going to get sick.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, you've got some fantastic recipes in the book. You know, some, as you say, you know, sort of versions of this, the kind of stuff you might buy that ends up being quite processed. You've given us kind of relatively simple ways of creating that. I mean, one of the things I really liked is you give us a very there's very simple recipes for things like nut milks. Now, you know, that's an interesting one, isn't it? Because so many people are thinking, oh, I'll avoid dairy, so I'll have a plant-based milks. But actually, a lot of them are absolutely full of crap. That's the reality. You know, I said that, you didn't. But fortunately, it's very simple to make your own, right?
Yeah, it is really simple. And you're right about nut milks. And actually, a lot of vegan foods, you know, the way that it's produced, give it a shelf life, give it the right consistency and everything else you need to do. Often many of them have a lot of additives added. This was what was really fun for me creating the book was actually, I was like, wow, I've actually made my own nut milk. And then I was making coconut milk and I was making tomato ketchup.
You just cut out there for a moment. Sorry, you said you were making tomato ketchup. Yeah, I like the sound of that. My kids, you know, I mean, we eat really healthily, but the kids will insist on really crap tomato ketchup.
You know what about tomato ketchup? It is really hard to get it red. So if you make it yourself.
Yeah, because it's kind of orange, isn't it? Yeah.
Add allspice, which is the flavouring in it, and it goes brown. So I don't know how Heinz do it. You know, what you look on the...
But I think, you know, some of those kind of very simple ideas for, you know, things like nut milk, you've got a vegan version of mayonnaise, which is easy to make. You even teach us how to make vegetable stock, which I've got to confess I haven't tried yet, but I really like the idea of that. I mean, what a fantastic idea, make your own vegetable stock. Who'd have thought?
Yeah. And also to batch it, you know, when you go to the effort of making it, make lots of it. Got loads of stuff in my fridge there then, ready for you to start making other dishes. I mean, I say that flippantly as well, because also I've worked with clients and I'm like, batch cook. And then I realise they haven't got a freezer or they've got a small freezer. So again, it's looking for workable space, what stuff can keep in the fridge for 4 or 5 days. And then if you've only got that one batch dish in the fridge, how can you change that every day to turn it into something that's interesting to eat so you don't get this sort of fatigue? So again, it's just thinking about individual, right? And this is the whole thing about nutrition advice and everything else you give. So yes, you just about workable solutions and finding out what works for you.
And you know, what's your view then on how we kind of balance the kind of macronutrients? How do we look at how we get the right sort of balance of stuff? You know, how much fat, how much carbohydrate, how much protein? What's your view on that? Because, you know, personally, I look at the government's, you know, eat well or whatever it is plate. And to me, that would be the eat badly plate, because I don't agree with it at all. Well, that's just my personal view. But I'd be interested to know what you think.
I mean, the eat well plate has come under a lot of criticism, but it is based on science. So it's intrinsically, it's right. But, you know, I think people get confused with it because they think that it's got on a plate every day or every meal. It's actually just a general advice that the majority of your diet should probably come from unprocessed grains. So we've got brown rice, you know, brown pasta, those kind of foods. Then you've got your nice lean proteins. Some people prefer to eat more protein and less carbohydrate. That just works better for them. They might be more sensitive to carbohydrates and they really feel that sugar and the hunger that comes after eating those kind of foods. So there might be a bit of jiggling around that. Some people find it's easier to manage weight if they have a bit more protein, a little less carb in their diet, or they feel less tired because of the effect of these blood sugar changes. Yeah. And then I think the big one for me is fat. It's getting people to understand that fat isn't bad.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I think that's really where I've perhaps got it wrong, if I've got it wrong, is that what I've read tends to gear towards, you know, low fat options. And I personally don't agree with that at all.
I don't agree with it either. I think you're completely right there. And I think that people need to get out of that 90s messaging that was eat low fat. Actually, fat is a hugely important part of our diet. It helps to fill you up, keep you feeling full. It helps. It's got a lot of nutrients in there that are fat soluble. And from a UPF perspective, you know, the whole fat foods are in their most unprocessed form. So, you know, rather than reaching for a virtually fat-free yogurt that's got colour, sweetener, thickener,
exactly.
Everything else. You're better off having a little bit of some nice whole fat Greek yogurt with some fresh berries. It's going to be better.
Exactly. Exactly.
Fuller for longer because there's more of it to digest than this sort of weird concoction that you get.
Yeah, but then it gets confusing again, doesn't it? Because then people go, okay, so I'll make sure that so fats are okay, so I'll make sure I cook with oils, and then you get all the conflicting advice around the how just how bad for you certain seed oils are. So
Oh,
what would you recommend in terms of cooking?
yeah, this question drives me bananas. I get questions all the time, like, what's your opinion on rapeseed oil? What's your opinion on blah, blah, blah? My view on this is, I don't even know why. If you're concerned, just use olive oil. It's been used in the Mediterranean for hundreds of years. It's part of the Mediterranean diet, which we know is fantastically good for us, reduces our risk of all sorts of health conditions. So I don't know why people are arguing over oil. No.
Well, I think it's more the kind of the cheap vegetable oils that we get them, we certainly feel as though they're not at a high smoke point. That's not going to be ideal, right?
Thing. So this is another thing. Somebody actually made a criticism about my book on Amazon about this, but you can use olive oil for everything, extra oil. The only thing you can't use it for is deep fat frying, and that's what I recommend you do on a regular basis anyway with your foods. You can use it because it does have a smoking point. It's okay for this. It doesn't change it.
Olive oil, yeah. But not the cheap vegetable oils, that's the point, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think you can buy pretty reasonably priced extra virgin olive oil now from the
It's
supermarket.
really gone up though, don't you think? My God, I'm sure it's increased massively in the last 6 months.
I think I read somewhere that there is a problem with production, so I think the prices are going up. But I mean, I think the next best oils for me, well, I was going to say rapeseed oil, but it seems to come under a lot of criticism, rapeseed, because of the omega content and because of the uric and stuff like that. So, I mean, I would just try and stick to it. And I would, when you're cooking with oil as well, you don't need to just free pour. If this is where I think with people that are like, I'm using healthy oil, but I'm putting on weight, you just need a tablespoon. You're better off buying yourself a really good non-stick pan, so you need to use less oil, just to cook with. And also on that olive oil front, there are different types of olive oil. So if you're going to buy very expensive olive oil, you're obviously not going to cook with it. You drizzle with it. But the other type you buy is perfectly fine.
And then, of course, we have to touch on sugar. Again, many people listening to this will have got a total sugar head on after they've stopped drinking. It's very common. And, in the early weeks, we tend to say, look, it's not your biggest problem right now, but obviously have, healthier sugar swaps if you can, wherever you can, let's have a square of dark chocolate or whatever, rather than, mainlining on Haribos or whatever. But what advice would you give generally around sugar, given that, again, your book, you're trying to be realistic. It's pointless trying to say avoid all sugar because it ain't going to happen, although making your own tomato sauce is a good start, isn't it? Or whatever, because you're not going to be getting all the hidden sugars.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I would start with do it slowly. Don't just, I think anybody, and with my clients, anyone that says, I'm going to give this up, they give it all at once, and then they start getting cravings for it and they just want more of it. Gradually reduce your sugar intake, and I guarantee you will want less of it the less you eat. It's just how it works. Maybe look for simple food swaps to start with, like you said, the dark chocolate instead of the Haribo. Stop putting sugar in your tea. Just all those little small changes do actually add up to quite a big change if you stick with it over a long period of time. And over that time, you sort of weaned yourself off slowly. Like you said, look out for hidden sugars. So, you can check the front of the packet. That'll tell you, the traffic light labeling will show you how much sugar's in there. It's just about going nice and slow and steady, rather than just trying to give it all up all together at once. I don't think that it never really.
And just to reiterate, I'm sure you agree with me that artificial sweeteners are, the devil's own work, so I wouldn't go for that.
I funnily enough, I never used to think that, because I was always in the mindset, which I've been trained for, is that they're a good alternative to sugar. There's some people that can benefit, people that are trying to lose weight, for example. But yeah, my opinion has done a bit of a U-turn, and now I'm very like, be better off having a little bit of sugar, to be honest, than the artificial sweet. Again, it's to do with your gut microbiome. There's some research about how it can alter that, and also the fact that high amounts of these artificial sweeteners can trigger the same sweet taste response
Exactly.
brain. So, and actually, this is something I used to work on a show called Super Size Super Skinny, and it was even then there was the people that were sort of very overweight drank loads of Diet Coke. On the show was, you know, that you develop a sweet taste because it's even sweeter than sugar, and it can cause you to want to eat more sweet food. So yeah, I'm kind of with you on that.
Yeah, sure. And you talk as well about mindful eating, and I think this is a really important one, isn't it? That this whole thing around, you know, how do we take a bit more of a mindful approach to our meals? I mean, I think most of us realize that kind of just eating on the hop too often is not going to be good for us. But what else can we do to kind of focus on eating mindfully?
Well, make time for food to start with, I think, is one of the most important things. You know, you need to, it's important that you, we all think we're so busy, don't we? We're all too busy to do something, this and that. But we've always got enough time, really, to sit down and focus on food and eat something. You know, there's, you know, there's lots of technique. Everyone talks about putting your fork down between mouthfuls, not having dinner on your lap in front of the TV, so you're actually focused on the moment.
Yeah.
Quickly, which, you know, I'm really bad for this. I'm really trying to do it much more slowly so that your body can really register the full. But on the UPF front, that's quite hard because a lot of these foods are very soft. The bread has got emulsifying that's softening it up. Pringles melt in the mouth. Breakfast cereal goes soggy very quickly. So it's really easy to wolf these foods down and bypass those satiety signals so that you're then still wanting to eat. And you know, there's research that shows that the speed that you eat, you know, you can consume as much as 500 calories more by the speed and the quantity of the food that you eat, because it's much softer and easier to pull down and digest. So, you know, yes, I do think focusing on mindful eating is definitely very important.
Sure. So finally then, what, you know, share what would be your favorite recipe or your favorite kind of group of recipes that you've got in this book? What are you kind of proud of?
That chicken tikka recipe I put together is absolutely delicious. The bread is very good. I'm not a bread maker.
Tell us about the bread. What is it, easy to make?
It's dead easy. So when you make bread, you've got to do two proofings, and unfortunately that takes an hour each, so you need to set aside some time. But honestly, once you get the flow of it, it's just dry ingredients, bit of water. You've got to knead it, so it gets you a bit fit at the same time. It's really, really easy to make, and it is really tasty. I make two at a time, and I live on my own, so I just slice them up straight away and put them in a bag. Because I try to do sourdough a gazillion times.
Well, then you need a sourdough starter, don't you? So you're into another whole thing.
Yeah, and I just couldn't get it. So I hadn't got the patience or the, I just lost the will to live. So I decided to do a normal braise in the book. And actually the pita as well, they're so easy to do. I would definitely try some of those sort of, those bread products, because they're really cool. And there's a, I'll keep going now. There's the tagine that's amazing as well.
A tagine?
Tagine that's very good, and I do it with a tahini dressing that's absolutely delicious and pomegranates. And the way the book's designed is that you make more of the dressings, and I feature the dressings in lots of recipes, so that if you've got left, you can look for a recipe to use up what you've got left. So there's ways of navigating the book to avoid and hopefully save a bit of money and make it easier.
Yeah, exactly. And I love that. You know, I think if people only take away that kind of idea of, you know what, I can drum up my own sauce and dressing and make foods interesting, even just by doing that, you've made everything so much healthier, because you've taken away all that, the emulsifiers and the sugars and the God knows what that's in those jars.
I mean, to be honest, if all you took away is made some pita breads a week, cooked a couple of dishes, I made your own tomato ketchup, you know, if that's what you took away from this and you did that every week, then you've done something, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Bread, you've done something, which is a step in the right direction.
Yeah, fantastic. And if you're having plant-based milk, make your own, because it's easy. It really is.
So the you should try making your own nut butter. It's surprisingly a lot easier.
Oh, I haven't done that. Okay.
Stick in the food processor 10 minutes. It's like magic. It just turns to nut butter. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, you know, the thing is, you know, if you make these things fresh, they don't need all the preservatives. It's not their fault. They're having to put preservatives in because the goddamn thing needs a 2-year shelf life. But when you're making it yourself, you don't need that, right?
Which is kind of different by us as well, because we want things to last long. We want things to compete. So it's, you know, it's been driven by everybody, but yes, home cook, start making some of your own stuff.
Just one last thing that I have to ask you quickly. When we spoke last, we did a whole interview around sleep, around nutrition for sleep. But just very briefly, you know, what's your top tip as to how, you know, unprocessed food and good food can help us with sleep, particularly if we're in the early weeks of ditching the booze and sleep's not easy?
Yeah, definitely. So if you're going to choose something ultra processed for dinner, for example, there's a good chance it's high in saturated fat and it's high in sugar. The sugar's probably going to keep you awake or make you awake later in the evening, especially if you've got like type 2 diabetes. It's a big one for that. You can get indigestion quite easily from these high fat foods. So I would think if you're having unprocessed foods, which are much more nutrient dense, you're more likely to get the nutrients that promote sleep. So magnesium, example, we use B vitamins and calcium we use to make melatonin in the brain. So just getting that a really good nutritious diet overall will help you in your path to getting a better sleep. Getting nutrients that help support.
Great. I know on our last session, you gave us a idea as well for a really lovely nighttime drink. So I'll drag out the recipe and we'll share that as well. Yeah, really good. So Rob, just remind us, the book is Unprocess Your Life. Remind us of your website and your Instagram.
Yep. So you can contact me through the contact page on robhobson.co.uk. My Instagram handle is Rob Hobson Nutritionist, and that's probably all you need to know. The book's called Unprocess Your Life. It's available on Amazon, Waterstones, Sainsbury's, lots of other shops. W. Smith's.
Brilliant. Thank you. Well done, you, Rob. It's a really brilliant book. I love it. Thank you.
That's really kind. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. So we'll put all the details for the book in the show notes. And just a reminder that alongside this good nutrition, you know that my mantra is keep the ritual, change the ingredients. And what I mean by that is have yourself a nice glass of something. As adults, we do like that. We don't, you know, want the warm orange juice and the Coca-Cola. We like a nice glass of something a bit more grown up. And I forgot to mention that we did our sober coach training, and it's brilliant to meet like-minded people who want to go on to be sober coaches and to share ideas around what we're enjoying in terms of alcohol-free drinks. And we had a whole bunch of kombuchas, canned kombuchas from Hip Pop. Fantastic brand. They're all these beautiful, colourful, different flavours, living sodas. So check them out. Hip Pop, such a great brand. And of course, kombucha is actually good for you, particularly this one. It's got no artificial sweeteners in it. It's really good for you. And, you know, actually kind of supports your, you know, supports you probiotically, as it were. So a really fantastic alternative to alcohol. So check that out. Thanks again to Rob. Really appreciated that interview. If you are a member of the Sober Club, there's also an interview with Rob on sleep, which we touched on quite in depth, Q&A around sleep. Sleep can be a big one, can't it, in the early weeks, for sure. I do get quite a lot of people say, oh, is it normal that, you know, I'm 3 weeks in, I still can't sleep? It really is. It's very normal. It's exhausting, of course, but it is very normal. It will get better. But there are a few things you can do nutritionally to support that. So do join us in the club if you haven't thought about it before. TheSoberClub.com. You can always leave for, come in for a month. Leave us if you don't like us. But I think you will, because it's absolutely packed full of inspiration. We have an online course, Get the Buzz Without the Booze. And we have masses of inspirational content. So if your early days, perfect. There's everything there for you. And if you've already been sober for weeks, months, or even years, then there is still a wealth of material and connection there. And it's fantastic to give back as well. It's amazing when somebody puts a post up and they talk about feeling exactly how you remember feeling. And there's such power in being able to share, how you got through that period of time. So do check out Sober Club. Do come along to Family Constellations if you can. There's still some spaces left. It's in York on Sunday, 25th of February. Be amazing to see you there. If you go to thesoberclub.com and click on events, then you'll find all the information there. Also, we have a webinar, What Does It Mean to Be a Sober Coach? So I appreciate that's not for everyone, but if that is something that you've been thinking, you know what, it's time. I'd like to put some things in place for my future. I'd like to think about inspiring others. Then there's a free webinar on Wednesday, 21st of February. What does it mean to be a sober coach? But you do have to register for that. You can always drop me a message if you want to find out more. Again, if you go to thesoberclub.com and click on events, you'll find all of that information there. And finally, we are planning another live podcast recording. So that's likely to be end of March. So I'll give you more details as soon as we've got that firmed up. You know where to find me, at Janie Lee Grace. I'm very easy to find on social media. Please share this podcast, rate it, review it, all of that stuff. Make sure you spread the word. It really makes a difference. And if you are early days ditching the booze, hang on in there. It is so worth it. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.